Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm John Schumann with Medical Monday. It may not seem obvious, but there's tremendous interest among U.S. medical students and resident trainees to participate in global health experiences. Global health is the idea of participating in the healthcare system of another country for a specified length of time to address the health of the whole population or to work on a specific outbreak. Think of the Ebola outbreak in West Africa of recent years. Global health missions usually involve bringing resources, knowledge, and particularly manpower to areas of the world that are underdeveloped, resource-constrained, or involved in conflict, whether man-made or natural. My guest today, Dr. Fook Lay, is a hospitalist physician and global health expert at the University of California at San Francisco, where he serves as an associate professor of medicine and pediatrics. He's also appointed on the faculty of UC Berkeley's School of Public Health. Lay was born in Vietnam and left as a refugee with his sister and mother when he was 5 years old, eventually making it to the United States, where he worked his way to college at Dartmouth, medical school at Stanford, and residency at the Brigham and Women's Hospital in Boston, Massachusetts, where he spent a significant portion of his time working in Haiti with a non-governmental organization called Partners in Health, the group started by Drs. Paul Farmer and Jim Kim, which helped tackle some of the most significant public health challenges in resource-poor settings through the buildup of local community health workers. Dr. Lay has started a 2-year global health fellowship through UCSF that takes residency graduates in various fields and supports them to work in different settings across the world that are all resource-constrained in more ways than one. He also just started a public-purpose company called Arc Health, named for the quote from Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., that the arc of the moral universe is long, but bends toward justice. Arc Health seeks to place physicians in resource-poor settings to try to address disparities in health outcomes. Dr. Fook Lay of UCSF is my guest today on Studio Tulsa Medical Monday. Dr. Fook Lay, welcome to Medical Monday. Let's start by having you talk about your role at UCSF. What kind of work do you do there in regard to global health?
I am an associate professor of internal medicine and pediatrics, and my clinical role at UCSF is as a hospitalist, a teaching hospitalist. I also have an appointment at the University of California, Berkeley, where I teach global health and public health. At UCSF, my global health roles are in the training space. I co-founded a fellowship model that's called the HEAL Initiative, which stands for Health Equity, Action, and Leadership. And it's a 2-year fellowship program that is interprofessional, meaning we have physicians and non-physicians in the program, that is multidisciplinary. So we have physicians of all different specialties, from primary care to specialists. And we have a unique program in that the fellows spend no clinical time at UCSF, and actually all of their clinical time spent either in Navajo Nation domestically or at an international site, with partners such as Partners in Health and other leading global health organizations in resource-constrained settings.
So how do you find these clinical opportunities for your fellows?
Well, initially it was just through our own personal networks. We really focused on organizations that had a true health equity agenda. And what I mean by that is they're part of a solidarity movement towards health as a human right, and especially we'll focus on rural populations, often native populations or indigenous populations, and are part of what we call a horizontal type of healthcare structure, i.e. comprehensive healthcare rather than focusing on certain diseases, that our partners really focus on whatever comes, primary and preventive care. And lastly, they work in conjunction or are part of the public sector, i.e. the government, because we believe that the only real actor that can bestow the right to healthcare is the government. And as healthcare organizations, we need to be strengthening the government's responsibility and role in achieving that mandate.
Do you find that, you're in San Francisco, so I'm going to assume, and plus you have this fellowship, which I guess has how many fellows per year? Is it like 20?
Yes. So over the past 4 years, we've recruited about 100 fellows. We've graduated half of them, and about 50 are in the program now.
I mean, that's really amazing. So these are people who have gone usually to college, then on to medical school, and then they finished a residency beyond that. So many of them have been in training for 11 years, and then they are willing to apply and then add on 2 more years in this Health Equity Action Leadership Global Health Fellowship, working in resource-constrained areas, you yourself said. So these are pretty committed individuals.
Yes, we feel that way. You know, we feel that these are people who see that there is a skill set that's needed above and beyond what they learned in medical school and residency that would allow them to become leaders in global health. And we truly spell out these skills in the form of competencies. We have a very clear, defined set of competencies that fellows are to be, our fellows are to achieve by the end of their time with us. They also get a Master's of Public Health degree online that's also provided by the HEAL Fellowship. And you know, as part of the fellowship, they get a community of practice, they get mentorship, they get really specific curricula from us. And over those 2 years, our goal is to make leaders out of our fellows. And of course, in an ideal world, that all of them would be committed to spending the rest of their careers serving the underserved, either domestically in the U.S., internationally, or a combination.
So you mentioned that you see healthcare as a human right, and I agree with you there. And it seems like the government is really the only entity that can enable that. But I guess I wonder if you get pushback. Do you find that people talk about, you know, the American way, or that we believe in the private market and that healthcare is more a privilege? People probably don't want to use that language, but essentially voting with their feet or what have you, that healthcare is a privilege and not a right, or a right, you know, of the employed, for example, or the, in some cases, the indigent. For example, you're in California where they have Medi-Cal or where they've expanded Medicaid. You know, here in Oklahoma, we have not done that yet. I'm hopeful that we will. But do you get into kind of philosophical discussions with folks, or do they steer clear of you and your groups?
Right. You know, for a lot of people, when it comes down to the argument of morality, that is an argument that's kind of hard to win because people say, well, your morality is different from mine, and so let's agree to disagree. So oftentimes, I just really get down to the practical aspects of health as a human right. And I say, and I say to people, how much is the U.S. spending per capita on health? And that amount and that percentage of our GDP that we spend is far and away higher than other high-income countries such as Japan or Great Britain or France, any of those countries that have better health outcomes than we do, higher life expectancies, all have a right to health care ingrained in their government constitution. And of course, they all have nationalized single-payer health insurance schemes that cover the indigent, that cover immigrants, refugees, and all of those who otherwise in the U.S. may not be eligible to get or may not be able to afford health care, and all at a lower cost than what we pay here in the U.S. And so that argument oftentimes will be a much more effective argument for those who say that health care is not necessarily a right but a privilege. You know, we just talk about the basic, very practical issues of financing health care.
You're listening to Studio Tulsa. It's Medical Monday. I'm John Chu, and my guest today is Dr. Fook Lay, who is an associate professor of medicine and pediatrics at the University of California at San Francisco. He also is a faculty member at the University of California, Berkeley, where he teaches in the public health program there. And he is the co-founder and director of the Health Equity Action Leadership Global Health Fellowship, or HEAL Fellowship, as it's known. And Dr. Lay, tell us a little bit more about your fellows. You said it's been going on for 4 years. You have over 100. Half of them have graduated. You can actually see really nice bios of the fellows on the website. But where in, I mean, I know they come from all over, but give us a smattering of where some of these folks come from. And then once they complete the fellowship, what kinds of opportunities they move into?
Sure, I'm happy to. One important aspect of the fellowship I haven't had a chance to go into detail in is we have a one-for-one model where when we recruit fellows who are from the communities that HEAL is partnered with, i.e., if we have one fellow who is a recent graduate from, say, Oklahoma, then we also will recruit a fellow who is part of the community in Navajo Nation so that they get to work together on the ground during the 2 years of their fellowship. They get the same educational opportunities. And that way, we actually are building skills both for people who are way more likely to remain at those sites and be retained at those partner sites for the long term. But that is a way to build true equity into the program so that it's not only the privileged few that are eligible or would be competitive for our program, but really it is a way to force a different type of paradigm into global health education. And getting to your other question about the types of people, so I'll just give an example of Dr. Shoei Khan, who is a first-year fellow who's a family medicine physician from Oklahoma. And he is currently in Liberia, working in a very rural place in Liberia. As you know, Liberia was the epicenter of the Ebola epidemic in West Africa in 2014, and they're still suffering from the consequences, both economic and human consequences, of that epidemic. So Dr. Khan, who is working with our partners there called Last Mile Health, they're a large nonprofit organization, he's seeing patients, he's doing trainings, he's doing quality improvement projects, and at the same time, he's studying for classes in his Master's of Public Health program online. So it's a busy program, and by the time he's done, we would expect, like some of our other fellows, for him to either get a job with the organization he's working with, either there in Liberia or in Navajo Nation, or he'll commit to a different job that is also equally focused on care for the underserved. Some of our fellows leave geographically for other parts of the U.S. or other countries even, but over 90% of our fellows remain in the global health space, meaning they're still committing their careers to underserved communities, whether it's urban, rural, domestic, or international, or combination.
So are there other fellowships like this, I mean, in the U.S. or in the world even?
We believe this is the only fellowship of its kind that's full-time over 2 years that has the domestic and international piece, and also that true equity piece, which is the one-for-one ratio of fellows who come from outside the communities and who are from the communities. And it's also multidisciplinary and interprofessional and of this size. We believe it's the only one, but we do hope that down the road, other schools, other organizations would see this as a viable, even preferable option for global health training, and that they would start their own version and adapt this model as well.
I mean, it sounds so straightforward and like such a good idea, but I imagine since you're kind of the first of your kind to offer this type of fellowship, that there were some hurdles to overcome in terms of getting it organized and funded. So how is it that the fellowship receives funding?
That's a good question. And yes, as you can imagine, anything that is of this size is quite complex. And funding, as is always the case in global health, it's always challenging, in particular when it comes to anything that requires philanthropic funding. So when we set out to develop here, we knew we needed a relatively financially sustainable business model that would not require us to year in, year out, go and fundraise for all of our needs. And so what we did was, because our fellows are fully trained physicians and fully licensed, board eligible, board certified, that actually the work that they do could be actually reimbursable and through third-party reimbursement. And so the positions they take, for example, in Navajo Nation, those are opportunities for Navajo Nation clinical facilities to actually get reimbursed for that clinical work through third-party payments. And so HEAL then gets funding from Navajo Nation, Indian Health Service, for the clinical work of our fellows. And that is how we are able to really make ends meet financially with our philanthropic efforts being a way to backfill kind of a small deficit. So somewhere between 10 and 15% of our operating budget is based on philanthropy, i.e. Grants and donations. But the rest is truly from the clinical work of our fellows.
So I can see how the clinical work would be fundable in the United States setting or working through auspices like Indian Health Service or other community health centers. But internationally, we probably for the better, fortunately, I'm trying to say, a lot of international health, especially in resource-constrained areas, aren't going to be reimbursable through, the DRG system or how healthcare is funded in the United States. It's great that it's free of that. But of course, if it's not reimbursable, then is that, are those the commitments that are going to require philanthropic support, or are there NGOs that fund that?
Correct. So all of our international partners and our domestic partners have a stake in HEAL, have ownership in HEAL, in kind, because everybody is contributing either financially, in kind, or a combination. And so our international partners provide such a valuable in-kind contribution, such as, you know, logistical support, housing, meals, in-country transportation. All of those are very, very valuable. In addition to advising on-site and mentorship for our fellows, and many of them also contribute financially, maybe not to the level of the Navajo Nation, but certainly a meaningful and significant amount relative to the overall budgets of those organizations. So everybody pays into HEAL, and everybody at the end of the day benefits from having the community that HEAL provides, the clinical and the teaching and the leadership work that our fellows provide on the ground.
And so you yourself, when you're not working as a hospitalist in San Francisco, I assume probably based on your CV, it looks like you spend a lot of time traveling. Is that still the case for you?
It's still the case, although less and less significant amounts of travel, because I now have two young daughters, a 6-year-old and a 3-year-old, and I find it much more challenging now to spend significant amounts of time away. And I think over the last 10 years in my career, I've transitioned from spending many months a year, you know, working alongside colleagues, caring for patients in resource-constrained settings, to now being able to more effectively support those same colleagues and same leaders who have committed to being on the ground and working in-country, and supporting them through training programs or through fundraising or through other forms of support. And I find that even though I do miss the physical act of seeing patients in resource-constrained settings, for many reasons, it's much more responsible for me to play a supporting role, but also I think a role that enables and amplifies their work on the ground.
So one of your roles administratively at UCSF is, and I don't know if this is still true or not, but you at one point at least were the director of international rotations for internal medicine residency. What percentage of your residents would get the opportunity or would take advantage of the opportunity to experience something internationally?
That's a good question. We have a very strong and significant interest in global health international rotations within the internal medicine residency. About 30 residents go per year, and they have to be senior residents. So nearly half of our senior residency class goes on a month-long international rotation per year. And those are rotations that are very well established, organized, mentored, and really reduce the possibility of harm, because these are short-term electives. And as you know, there's a big ongoing debate about how responsible it is to do short-term rotations, especially ones that don't have a lot of support on the ground, where residents who are not part of the community and don't know how to practice in those communities aren't prepared. It can actually cause or can do harm and can lead to a significant impact, not just on patients, but also on themselves. And so we try to mitigate that as much as possible by having a lot of pre-departure training and also rotations that are heavily supervised by attendings on the ground.
Interesting. Well, further, I was reading in your own bio that during your own residency, so this goes back a ways, that you, it looks like, worked with Partners in Health, which is a non-governmental organization, and I just want to ask you for a second about that, but you worked in locations as variable as Rwanda, Lesotho, Malawi, and even in Haiti post-earthquake. So, I mean, these are definitely some of the poorest countries or most resource-deprived areas on Earth, although Rwanda has made, from what I understand, significant strides in bouncing back from the genocide there, and I've heard some positive stories about economic development. Tell us a little bit about Partners in Health, and for our listeners who don't know, that's the organization that was co-founded by Drs. Paul Farmer and Jim Kim, who are two physician anthropologists, I think, who have worked in literally the most resource-constrained areas in the world and brought treatment and cures for specifically HIV and particularly tuberculosis. I mean, is that just what attracted you to that kind of work?
Yes, I think I was so privileged and blessed to have had an opportunity to work with Partners in Health in Boston during my residency because they're headquartered there. Where I did my residency was where doctors Kim and Farmer did their residency. And so the entire Partners in Health ethos was really just all around me. And I got to spend about 18 months of my residency working with PIH on the ground in post-earthquake Haiti, during the cholera epidemic, working in, coming back again and again to rural Malawi to work with colleagues and mentors there. So that is really kind of where I learned, you know, what it's like to do global health delivery and to see the long-term commitments of physicians and other providers there, and to see the model of Partners in Health, the partnership model, the equity model, the focus on the public sector, the focus on community health workers. All of that is important. The big focus on health as a human right. And so we've, at HEAL, we learned a lot from Partners in Health, and we are proud to be a sister organization of Partners in Health. We have many of our HEAL partner sites are indeed PIH sites, and PIH continues to, their leaders continue to mentor me and be a source of inspiration for our work.
You're listening to Studio Tulsa. It's Medical Monday. I'm John Schumann. My guest today is Dr. Fook Lay, who is an associate professor of medicine and pediatrics at the University of California, San Francisco. He's also on the faculty at UC Berkeley's School of Public Health and the co-founder and director of the Health Equity Action Leadership Initiative, which is a two-year fellowship in global health and resource-deprived settings for graduates of medical education, really students who've gone through medical school and then finished their residencies who go on to commit a two-year post-residency commitment. And Dr. Lay, you've become, I guess, an entrepreneur because you started this fellowship and now have started really a nonprofit. Is it a nonprofit? A business called ARC Health. Tell us a little bit about ARC Health and what your goals are there.
Sure. So technically, it'll be a public benefit corporation. So not a 501c3 charity, but also it has a really health equity, social justice orientation and mission. So ARC Health, the name is inspired by a quote, very famous quote from the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. when he said, "The moral arc of the universe is long, but it bends towards justice." So ARC Health's goal is to help bend that arc a little bit more sharply, a little bit more quickly. And ARC Health, the model is that we want to provide the best doctors for the underserved. That's pretty simple. And how do we do that? We recruit outstanding clinicians, connect them with the most underserved communities in the U.S. and internationally. And in the U.S., these would be tribal communities that are part of reservation systems and tribal health systems that are on reservations. We provide some upskilling in social, so-called social medicine skills so that they can be as effective as they can during their time on the tribe or on the reservation. And then more importantly, the long term is that our revenues will be reinvested into pathway programs that would then enable the next generation of Native American providers, doctors, nurses, and so on, to grow those numbers, and that they would be the long-term solution for the healthcare staffing crisis that is on right now many tribal health facilities in the U.S.
Is it too early to tell what kind of success you'll have with staffing some of these positions, or is it pretty clear because of the fellowship you'll be able to find folks who will work in these positions?
Well, we're not actively soliciting or recruiting from HEAL fellows because we want to make sure that there's no conflict of interest. But you know, we think that the pool of people who are interested in serving underserved populations, whether it's intermittently or part-time or through a locums model, is much, much larger than the pool of people who have the ability and their life circumstances to spend 2 years full-time doing the HEAL fellowship. So ARC Health and HEAL are two tools that are mission-aligned and just different ways for people to get involved, different ways to grow the umbrella of outstanding doctors who want to contribute to health justice.
Well, It's really an incredible endeavor. I wish you a lot of luck. I want to end by asking a little bit about your background, because I think it probably isn't a huge leap to say that your background has a lot to do with your passion for global health and health equity. Can you tell us a little bit about your origin story?
Sure. So I was born a year after the Vietnam War ended. So that was 1976. And I was born in a very rural place. I was not born in a healthcare facility. I was born at home in the middle of the night, as it always is. And during my first 5 years of life, I didn't really have access to healthcare because it was a war-torn country, post-war country, that had its entire health system decimated by bombings and underfunding for decades. And so I was a sickly kid. My mom used to say that I had a protruding belly and was short and would be very irritable. And it wasn't until we fled Vietnam on a boat and ended up being rescued and then put into a refugee camp in Hong Kong that I actually received a pill, a single pill, that cured me of what I think now were intestinal worms that really impacted my growth. I often make a joke to my students saying, you know, I'd probably be 2 inches taller, 5'10 instead of 5'8. if I'd had that pill at age, you know, one, or if I'd never suffered from the stunting that I had. And so, you know, my initial experience in life was through being a victim of health inequity or health inequality. But it didn't really dawn on me how important that was to my future until I was in college and in medical school, when I started learning more and gaining the vocabulary of social justice and gaining mentors like doctors, you know, Jim Kim and Paul Farmer and many, many others that I worked with during my residency. But yeah, I think that remains to this day the source of inspiration for me to become part of the solidarity movement, to continue to ally myself with organizations that are truly committed to health as a human right and for providing the best possible health care for every person.
Well, Dr. Phuc Le is an associate professor of medicine and pediatrics at the University of California, San Francisco, where he's also on the faculty at UC Berkeley in their School of Public Health. He focuses on global health and is the co-founder and director of the Health Equity Action Leadership Initiative, which is a 2-year post-residency fellowship for people interested in global health in underserved settings, and also has just founded ARC Health, which is a public purpose corporation with the goal of providing medical assistance, really physician care in underserved areas. And Dr. Phuc Le, congratulations on all your work, and it's been really interesting talking to you. Thank you so much for joining us.
It's my pleasure and my privilege. Thank you so much, John.
Well, that's our show for this Medical Monday. Studio Tulsa is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of KWGS or the University of Tulsa. For Studio Tulsa, I'm John Schumann with Medical Monday. Thanks for listening.